Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle.
I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Wednesday in the playbook here on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Eric Scalavino from PFW here.
Hey, John.
For opening hour of the program. How are we doing today?
Good, man. How are you?
You know what? We've done it again. I think we've hit the news nugget, nugget vein this week.
10 for 10.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
10 for 10.
I know you wrote about it this week. I haven't gotten my issue in the mail yet this week. It's slow again this week. So, you know, perhaps you could give us a little insight as to the story again that you wrote about, you know, the fact that we've got all these newsworthy things going on in a little bit. But the first thing I wanted to jump on, though, is the fact that, you know, obviously over the last 24 hours since I left the air here, a ton of stuff has happened, not the least of which is the news that broke earlier this afternoon that Stephen Gostkowski is on IR.
Yep.
And, of course, the Patriots signed Shane Graham
yesterday
before they knew that Gostkowski was going on to IR.
Well, I'm not sure about the timing of all that. That you may be right. I hadn't heard that part of the story.
The actually the first bit that I heard on Graham signing was actually yesterday evening, and I think it was actually a Boston Herald tweet, if I'm not mistaken. At any rate,
okay.
Makes no. I mean, you know, six of one, half dozen another. It was in all the papers today.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the news that came about this afternoon that Gostkowski was gone.
Yep.
So apparently, what we're hearing from Gostkowski now, and again, this is just, you know, according to several published reports now, that you know, Stephen has a torn quad muscle that we don't know, but it may require some surgery to repair.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. I mean, that's. That's a loss that may not hurt them as much now, but if they get into the playoffs, I'd rather have my reliable, trusted guy I know than somebody new who, I mean, he's not a bad kicker. Shane Graham's not a bad kicker, and he, you know, his last playoff experience, though, is the one that most people remember where he, you know, missed a couple of bad ones against the Jets last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think you're going to see the biggest area where you're going to miss Gostkowski is going to be on kickoffs, I think, because Gostkowski had one of the strongest legs in the league, was on pace, record pace, to break his own touchback record.
Right.
And Graham is not a touchback kicker.
No.
When it comes to kickoffs. So I, from a field position standpoint, I think that could hurt New England a little bit.
Oh, I think it'll hurt him a lot. I think you're going to have to really now, you know, when you, you know, in the past when you could reach back and say, hey, you know, Ghost, we really need, you know, we need this kick in the end zone. He could reach back and do that, you know, and you're not going to have that option. So special teams is going to require, you know, a little bit of advanced preparation now simply because you're not going to get the ball in the end zone.
Right. Yeah, it's a huge, the long snapper, the kicker, that whole triumvirate, having to work together, the punter, everything, it's bad timing for this to happen. I mean, not that there's ever good timing for injuries or having to reshuffle your roster, but, you know, the last thing that they had concerns about was Stephen Gostkowski and the kicking game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of a sudden, you have some question marks in an area where you thought you were pretty much set, which, you know, if you're heading down the back stretch of the regular season and looking forward to the, hopefully, postseason, not the kind of news we want to cover, but that's what we've been given this week. So
right. Of course, this you know, the reason that Graham, I think he actually, there are two teams out there looking for kickers this week, because I know the Lions also had an injury to their main kicker.
Jason Hansen. Yeah.
Right. So I guess there was a choice made there. But here's the connection: why, you know, Graham and the Patriots seem to be the fit was the fact that Graham has a background with Scott O'Brien, who's the Patriots special teams coach.
Yep.
When he was filling in as an emergency kicker for Carolina in 2002, O'Brien was coaching there at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He apparently also has familiarity with the new snapper that the Patriots just signed in Matt Catula.
That's right.
Of course, you know, the Patriots made a switch in terms of the snapping position as well, as they released Jake Ingram yesterday, or actually earlier today officially is when they made an announcement. So you've got this entire complete new two-thirds brand-new kicking team. You talk about snapper, holder, kicker. You know, you've got Zoltán Mezco, who's still apparently going to hold the ball. But this for middle-of-the-season stuff, you know, people think that this is, you know, not any big deal. This is going to take a little work and practice, I think, to iron all this out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a challenge to – I mean, some kickers and long snappers have said that, you know, it only takes a few days – because at this level, everyone's professional, you know, and that may be the case. But when you start working with somebody, no matter what job you do, you know, 3 days is usually not enough for you to get to say, oh, yeah, I'm very comfortable working with these people. I feel right at home. Everything's great. I mean, relationships like that take a while to, you know, working relationships take a while to sort themselves out or whatever, but they don't have the luxury of any more time than that. So 3 days, it's going to have to be.
Right. So you've got this, you know, new kicking unit that's out there, and will make this debut. You know, I guess it's somewhat, you know, ironic, but, you know, he has, you know, Graham certainly has experience kicking in Pittsburgh, and we all know that Heinz Field is not exactly the easiest place in the world for a kicker to perform with some of the swirling winds in the end zones there. So I suppose that's a plus if you want to look at it from that point of view.
Sure.
You're trying to look at it from a glass half full, you know, perspective.
Yeah, sure. No, yeah, that's one of the things I asked Bill about today, was whether or not that played a factor, and I'm sure it did in some small way. But the fact that I think it would have been more of a factor if Gostkowski were coming back, then you look short term and say, okay, we're playing Pittsburgh, you know, let's try to, you know, fine tune who we're our criteria for who we're going to pick, because. You know, you have the luxury to do that. Now with Gostkowski out for the year, you have to just go with whoever the best player available
right.
is.
And yeah.
Obviously they still...
I think they got that. I think they got the best player.
Yeah.
Yeah. And frankly, you know, I remember Graham from his days at Virginia Tech when I was, you know, covering Virginia Tech in the Big East when they were there. And you know, obviously he was a very, very good kicker in college. He's had some ups and downs in the pros, but he has made a Pro Bowl.
Yep.
So let's make sure that we give him some credit for that. And, you know, the Jets, you know, fiasco for the Bengals last year in the playoffs notwithstanding, you know, the fact is that he does have some experience in crunch time.
And I think, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say hopefully he'll be able to, you know, keep that chip on his shoulder for a while this year.
I think he was even franchised by the Bengals 1 year, if I'm not mistaken.
He might have been.
And, you know, kickers don't normally get the franchise tag.
Nope.
They obviously felt good about him for a while there. And, you know, he's one of those guys who's, what is he, like 85% in his career? Somewhere
first career,
around there.
85% so field goals, which certainly is a good percentage.
That's a reliable kicker.
Yeah,
that's a reliable kicker.
I mean, if you're making 7 to 8 out of every 10, you're in pretty good shape.
Right, and he's been around for 10 years, so you know he certainly has experienced crunch time. He's experienced everything you can in this league, short of a Super Bowl. But yeah, that's the best they could do at the moment. So that's going to have to do
the long snapper actually. You know, it might have come as a surprise to some fans. I guess, you know, Ingram had, you know, some problems in recent weeks. But at the same time, Catula actually was, spent the last, what, 4 years? With Baltimore. And I guess he lost his job to a rookie in this offseason, or, you know, in this last summer. So he basically has been out of a job for a while. That actually, I think, is also a very good pickup for the Patriots.
Well, sure. I mean, a guy with that kind of experience, they're hard to find at this time of year. Usually you're, you know, guys like that are guys who haven't been in the league for God knows when. I mean, remember, what year was it, 04, when they had the Patriots Super Bowl run, when they had the long snappers go down
right.
1 week after the other, and they went through, what, three players that year?
I think so.
I can't remember who it was. His name's escaping me, but there were three of them that year, and they all went down with like shoulder injuries, and they had to get off the scrap heap. Was it Kitchen? Brian Kitchen?
Kinchin. Brian Kinchin. Right. Yes, K-I-N-C-H-E-N.
Who was teaching Sunday school or something at the time and hadn't been in football for, I don't know, a couple of years or whatever at the very least. So,
right.
To get a guy who was, you know, this close removed from having been on an NFL team is, I think, like, you know, it's best case scenario for the situation. They got two guys who have experience and are, you know, have recent experience too.
Yeah, and experience with each other. Again, Shane was in Baltimore, you know, where when Catula was there as well, so for a while. So, I mean, fact is that this, you know, is hopefully a win-win,
right?
Especially when you consider you're making a change at one position and you've lost the other for the season on the injury list.
So that's all. Right. Yeah. It'll help speed up the relationship with the field goal unit. At least you hope, because the two of them, but the third component is Mesko and how he responds to the new snapper and getting, you know, getting, and I think Mesko did a very good job with Ingram and his bad snaps. So if he's got someone a little bit more reliable there, I don't think they'll be much of a problem, going forward with him. And he also handled the poor punt snaps too. Mesko did, fairly well. The kid's pretty athletic for, you know, a position that doesn't usually require that as much.
All right. Well, being someone who I know is who used to kick the ball, I know you can't get enough of good kicking talk.
Oh God, we could go on for the next hour and a half, John.
Nevertheless, I am going to try to push onward here and mention
for the sake of the audience. I think that's a good
exactly the player participation report today for practice.
Yeah, yep.
And there was the return of Fred Taylor, was there not?
There was, tempered ever so slightly by the absence of Tom Brady.
We can't expect that to be really mean anything, can we?
I doubt it. I would say that it's probably either not injury-related or...
He did appear in his press conference.
Absolutely did. So, I would say it's either not injury-related or he showed up later in practice and will be listed as limited when that report comes out at 4. So, but that, just something to note. It's an aberration, and again, probably won't be as big news at the end of the day as it was at the time, but... still noteworthy. Joining him, James Sanders, Jarrad Page again, and Myron Pryor, the other missing from the beginning of practice at the very least. You're right, Fred Taylor did return. He spoke in the locker room earlier, sort of previewing the fact that he was going to be out there. Wouldn't guarantee that means he's going to be out there on Sunday night, but it's a step in that direction. And, you know, he spoke pretty candidly and at length about his injury and how it affected him, and he's just a great example of what a professional athlete should be, Fred Taylor. And he gets a bad rap for all the injuries over the years, but you won't find a more quality person to talk to.
Well, you know, the fact that he was actually somewhat forthcoming about his injuries was a little surprising, considering what the Patriots normally say about their injuries.
But
the one thing that I learned that
veteran,
I did not
John.
Know, well, you know, sure, but the one thing that I learned that I did not know is that he's actually injured both big toes.
Yeah.
You know, the left one was, I guess, the one that was recent. He also had a true turf toe problem that happened back in the season opener that for a while was giving him some difficulty, but I guess has since calmed down. But this latest toe injury, he thought up until like a week or so ago, might require surgery.
Yeah. So, right. So it's people need to cut him a little bit of slack. I mean, like we talked about last week, I think, any athlete that's had a toe problem will tell you that they're agonizing and really difficult to come back from. You know, you're putting all your body weight at that. It's focused right on that area when you're trying to run. It makes it difficult just to walk even, but to run is another thing. And for a guy who relies on his legs for a living, it's difficult. But so you got to give Taylor the credit for toughing through it, and you know, and the Patriots credit for not giving up on him and placing him on IR when they could have. And
yeah, I think that's the one thing that I'm a little surprised at, that they didn't just go ahead and place him on IR, because the way that they
he's
had,
a talent, John.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, just the way that they had kind of proceeded on without him, you know, giving the ball to you know, Ben Jarvis and letting Woodhead get reps in there as well. I mean, they just clearly had seemed to kind of move on without him, but
because they had to.
Yeah.
They had to. And if you, I mean.
And usually in that case, though, Eric, they kind of like, all right, let's just put him on IR and be done with it, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't think a guy of Fred Taylor's ability, you just you do that with you don't do that, you don't do it so casually with a guy like him, especially at a position where you're pretty thin. I mean,
sure.
Green Ellis has had some good games. Yes, he was virtually invisible, non-factor against Cleveland. Woodhead got most of the reps that game. It wasn't going to be one of those grinded out type of games anyway, but you know, so that had something to do with it. But if you have a Fred Taylor, you try to find ways to get him on the field,
yep,
especially when he's healthy.
All right. So, were there any other notes coming out of the media portion of practice today?
Not a whole lot. They were in uppers. So I think now a month now that they've started Wednesdays not in full pads, which you know, I think as the season goes on, we'll see more of that to try to limit the pounding that the players are taking on a daily basis.
Right.
So yeah, that's really about it.
All right. Well, the question of the day then, while I know that, you know, there will be some that will want to, you know, probably talk a little bit about Gostkowski and some of the moves that have been made by this team, but question of the day that I actually have for our fans today, Eric, stems from conversations that, you know, I was having with them yesterday, for the most part, and sort of leads me to this conclusion today. We were talking about, you know, how really kind of difficult it was not to look at the big picture of this season, because the big picture view here is that this team is 6-2. But if you look at it individually, you could see where there are some real pitfalls that are coming up in the schedule.
Sure.
And that we kind of feel like, and I think you and I have felt like this all along, that, you know, this season is pockmarked with landmines throughout, and, you know, perhaps more so than any other year. And especially when you have a year that is as unpredictable as this one is and probably will remain, when we've got, you know, 10 or 12 teams that you could say, yeah, I could see that team in the Super Bowl. You got that kind of parity going on here. You know, this is truly a wide open game.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why, you know, okay, the loss to Cleveland stinks. It was a horrible game. The Patriots played lousy. Sure, we'll give Cleveland some credit, you know, but at the same time, you got to feel like, you know, hey, if you're a contending type team, that's not a game that you should lose, certainly by that margin. In fact, I think all Patriots fans, the reason that everybody was up in arms over this game was because this was the one road game you circled and thought you could win.
Well, and you can't
and
do that.
Do
you can't do that in the NFL.
But people do it anyway. I'm just saying,
I
know you can't do that. But I know that most of our fandom did that.
And I think
why it's very hard to deal with this particular loss.
Well, I also think in the back of their minds, many of the Patriots did too. By their comments after the game and the day after.
And I think, and I spoke about this yesterday, it kind of leads me to the, you know, a point that, you know, this team does have some, and I don't want to call people immature, but let's just say this is a lack of maturity on it, unlike what we've seen, say, 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with some of the younger presence in the locker room and the, shall we say, non-demonstrative veteran leadership that still exists in the locker room. They're not Teddy Bruschi. They're not Mike Vrabel. They don't go out and grab guys by the throat and say, this is the way, you know, that we do it here, and you got to fall in line, Jack.
Yeah.
That kind of thing doesn't exist anymore. So it's still, you're relearning a process. And because of that, fans, I think, and people who follow this football team have to also sort of relearn the process. So
right.
My question is to them today, and this is for everybody, webradio@patriots.com. You can also chime in on the Ace Ticket hotline at 508-543-7482. Or you can hit me up on Facebook, and I've got several responses already on Facebook because I put it up there earlier today. But I want to know, are you a big picture kind of fan, or are you more set in the immediate moment of a single game? Big picture fan, or are you more about the immediate moment and then, hey, let's move on to the next one? And I'm asking that just because of the unusual, you know, way that this season seems to be coming down. And I know that my initial instinct is that of an athlete's, and I look at it one game at a time and I move on. But I also can't help but try to look at the big picture here simply because you have to know where your opportunities, I think, are going to exist to make some headway.
Hmm.
How would you answer that question?
I'm usually a more of a big picture kind of guy, too. I mean, because every week is different. Every, you know, I know it sounds Belichickian to say that, but the season is, it's short in the number of games they play, but it's a long season in terms of the grind of it, you know? And there are going to be weeks where you just have a bad day and it's not a reflection on the team as a whole. There are going to be weeks where you have a great game and it's not a reflection of the team as a whole. It's usually somewhere in between the two. And I think if you try to stay level-headed and realistic and, you know, not get too high with the highs, not get too low with the lows, I think that's the best approach to take for a winning team to take when they when they're, you know, trying to make a playoff push or just any team at all, even. It doesn't even have to be a playoff team, but just try to stay even keel, not get too extreme with your emotions. It's difficult because it's an emotional game.
Well,
it's,
yeah, that, I was going to say that it's very hard to do in the NFL.
It
and
is,
the players, of course, while they have to subscribe to that, they really, players are a week at a time. They're more of an immediate moment.
And that's what makes them professionals at what they do. You're able to compartmentalize a loss, you know, a beating of the kind we saw on Sunday, or even a blowout win. You're able to file it away in its proper, you know, in its proper folder, if you will, and understand that there's something bigger that you're looking for. It's like I equate it to when a player celebrates after making a tackle or scoring a touchdown in the middle of like the second quarter. The game's not over. You save the celebration for the end of the game when the outcome is determined. And I look at it the same way as the season. I extend that to the season and say, there's no need to celebrate or get too down at the mouth in week 8, week 9, whatever, because the season's not over. Even teams that have a losing record at this point can still make the playoffs. And when you make the playoffs, anything can happen. So you have to try to maintain that perspective and look bigger picture. Sure, you can take individual weeks or games or plays and use them as motivation or learning tools or whatever. There's certainly nothing wrong with that. But to let it affect your entire psyche, I think, is a little too extreme.
Well, I want to know what the fans think. So webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 on the Ace Ticket Hotline. And, of course, Facebook page is up. I'll give you one here from Facebook. This one comes from Alan, who earlier this afternoon tells me, I am a big picture guy, and to me the big picture says that we are in a good spot. We will probably lose this Sunday, but we will kill the Colts because they can't tackle to save themselves. We will win all our home games. We will beat the Lions, Bears, and Bills on the road. Big picture to me looks like this. Against the Jets, we have a better record against common opponents. They lost to the Ravens. We beat them. All we have to do is keep pace with the Jets against common opponents and then, of course, beat them in Foxborough. Then we can win the division. Go Pats. That's definitely looking at the big picture.
It is, yeah. It's an optimistic view of the big picture. I'll say that. I actually think, John, anyway, we'll save our prediction and scores for tomorrow, obviously.
Yes,
but,
yes.
I feel better about the Patriots this week than I
really?
Than I probably would have if they had beaten Cleveland.
Really?
Yes.
See, I don't.
And I'll tell you why.
Okay.
You why. And Paul and Fred were laughing at me earlier because they were saying I just despise Ben Roethlisberger and I'm trying to rationalize my decision to pick against him, which is not entirely inaccurate. But after the Browns game, so many players were talking about how their terrible week of practice led to the letdown in, by the lake. And by Monday, it was almost as if they collectively got the message. And it's like they took that week too lightly, that opponent too lightly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were riding high. They were 6-1, best record in the league, you know, making plays, winning games that they probably weren't expected to win. You know, they were feeling pretty confident. And they got slapped in the face. And a little bit of reality, a reality check was given them by the Browns. And I think that will, just like I thought the Miami game might, we could look back and say that was a turning point as far as how the season's going to play out for this team. This is a second one.
Right.
In that I think it made them realize, because they're still, again, they're a young team. Not a lot of playoff and Super Bowl experience on this team anymore. It's games like that that help younger players develop into the kind of championship caliber players that you need to win Super Bowls. And I think just from a, you know, from a general view that I got in the locker room the next day and even that night in Cleveland, I think the message was received, and I think you'll see a different performance this Sunday in Pittsburgh.
Wow.
Whether or not it's enough against a very good, you know, Steelers team that's balanced on both sides of the ball remains to be seen, but I think you'll see I don't think you'll see an embarrassment like you did last week.
Well, I would agree with the embarrassment part. I think that this team will probably gather itself and probably is a little pissed off at itself right now based on what happened last Sunday against Cleveland, the mistake by the lake. And not the city. I'm talking about the game here.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think, you know, Cleveland's done a pretty good job of cleaning itself up. Love hanging out in the flats. It's a nice little city.
It really is.
Love hanging out in the flats. Did you go to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I've been there before.
Oh, okay. Right,
this
okay.
was my third trip to Cleveland, so yeah. I've experienced all that.
Yep. Well, I go every year. I mean, every time
really?
I go to Cleveland, I go. Yeah. Because there's always something I miss.
Well, and there's new stuff. Music's constantly evolving.
New exhibits. Of course, here we go. We're getting off on a tangent again.
It's that time, John.
It is that time. It's about
2:35 on a Wednesday.
We got to get off on a tangent. What the hell was I saying now?
You asked me if I enjoyed the flats, if I went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Okay, there we go. Did you?
I enjoyed it when I went back in 2000.
What the hell are you
Or 99, I forget what it was. 99 the first time I went, and then I went again in 2000 for the Hall of Fame game, actually.
Oh, yeah, right,
Patriots
sure.
Niners.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it's a fun little town. No, we went to we were going to go to the Winking Lizard, which was like
it's
right on like right on the corner of what's that Times Square building in New York? It's on one of those type of corners, like a corner that comes to a point street corner.
Yeah,
we went in there, but it was ridiculously crowded. There was a long wait, so we ended up going to a place called Harry Buffalo.
Oh, I know that place.
It was so we went there.
Yeah,
had
I know
some
that
wings,
place.
Yep. And then, so spent a couple hours there and then went over to, Brian Lowe, my roommate on the road. Brian Lowe and I went over to, the Chop House.
Nice.
Down on St. Clair, West St. Clair, to meet with some of the other, media, beat writers who were around.
Excellent.
And we just had a drink and some dessert.
See, now, I'll wager, though, that you didn't have a good close encounter of the first kind. By that I mean, you know, did you have a David Letterman brush with greatness? Because I have had one in Cleveland.
Really? Do tell.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it was the very first time I ever went to Cleveland. This was probably, we're talking over 10 years ago now. This has probably been closer to 15 years ago.
All right.
We were at, of all places, we were at a Hooters. Is there still a Hooters there in the flats somewhere?
Probably.
I'm pretty sure it was a Hooters, as I recall, because we were in there and doing the wing thing, and we're in the back room, and then all of a sudden we hear, you know, this commotion up front, and I hear somebody yell, "Drew!" It was Drew Carey.
Oh, walked really?
Walked right into the place.
Really?
Sat down at a table. One of the waitresses came up to him and just brought him a beer. He didn't even have to order it. Brought him a beer. And he saw us. We all had our, you know, Providence basketball stuff on at the time. There were probably about 6 or 8 of us that were in there.
Uh-huh.
He came over to us and just started chatting us up.
Really?
What are you guys in here for? Because we were there to play a game against Cleveland State at the time. And he was just as nice as he could be.
Really?
In fact, he was in and out, and nobody even thought about trying to ask him for an autograph. You
well, because they probably see him so often that it's no
but
big
he was
deal.
Just a regular guy, just walked in, dude, you know, he waved at everybody and came in,
cool.
sat down for a moment, you know, and then he kind of looked around, he saw us, he got up and he came over to us.
That's great.
Over to
That's
us
funny.
And said, "Hey, you guys are obviously not from around here, are you?" You know, one of those Drew Carey kind of looks, you know, kind of shaking and cocking his head a little bit there. And so we all started laughing and what gave that away, Drew? You
That's
know,
funny.
And, yeah, I got to tell you, it was one of the more awesome experiences that I've had with somebody.
And was his show
who,
on at that point?
Yeah, his show was
still on, right?
His show was still on ABC at the time, the Drew Carey Show, yes. So he was, I mean,
I
you
like
know, right,
that show.
Yeah, right in the middle of it all, and right at the, I would say, certainly at the height of his popularity.
I also liked Whose Line Is It Anyway? Did you ever watch that?
Yeah,
that was the improv show
hilarious.
That he hosted with.
Absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
All those guys that can do that.
Funniest shows of all time.
All those guys that can do that are just, they're spectacular talents, you know, in that regard. In fact, one of the guys on the show, on Who's Lining Anyway, was a regular on the Drew Carey Show as well.
Yeah, the tall guy, Ryan Stiles.
Yeah, Ryan Stiles, exactly. So, all right, good stuff. Okay, that's our momentary digression. but, you know, hey, we were talking about Cleveland, and how do you talk about Cleveland and not mention Drew Carey?
Yeah. So no, I didn't get to see him, though.
No Drew Carey sightings there, then. No. All right. All right, we'll kind of turn the page here. Make sure that you get your emails in. webradio@patriots.com. If you'd like, give us a call, 508-543-7482. Are you a big picture kind of fan? Or are you more set in the immediate moment of a single game, like the players? Make a choice. Let us know. You can also post it or chat it up on Facebook as well. We'll come back and continue Inside the Playbook in a moment.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats! What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. And account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
Yep, inside the Playbook, that's one way you can get us here on the program, 508-543-7482, web radio at patriots.com, the email, or you can look me up on Facebook, put in the friend request, and then you can chat like Derek from University of Arizona just did, Eric. He says, well, John, there goes my idea for Al Harris. He just signed with Miami.
Yeah, that was earlier in the day.
Yep, saw that. We chatted a little bit about it yesterday, and I told him, I said, you know, that would actually have surprised me just because I think the Patriots realized that, you know, Harris is a guy that's a little bit more advanced in terms of his age and his experience, and while that might be a good idea for the younger players, I didn't really think that I saw the Patriots taking a step back on this clear movement toward youth,
yeah,
especially for the secondary.
Yeah.
Or defensively.
I kind of agree. I saw the move when he was released, and it didn't strike me as this is a guy that New England will go after.
Right.
Even though they could probably use a little bit of help in the secondary, I just didn't. It didn't seem to me like an obvious choice.
And I guess Jason Allen was cut to make room for Al Harris too. So
yeah.
I don't know, you know, what that means, if anything, but it certainly leaves another potential, person out there if the Patriots decide they need to make some moves. Hey, I wanted to run these by you just because, quite frankly, I know how we like to digress, so I saved these for you today.
Okay.
But a buddy of mine, in fact, I've got several friends of mine who I, you know, email back and forth with regularly. You know, we're all old, high school buddies, and all of us are long-time, and not so much long-suffering, but long-time Cowboy fans, because that's where we all grew up. In fact, I can remember spending, a few odd Sundays whenever we were able to score tickets when we were all teenagers, you know, going to not just the Cotton Bowl, you know, when the Cowboys would play an occasional game there when we were young teenagers, but more so Texas Stadium, like in the late 70s. Mm.
Did you grow up in Dallas?
I grew up in Fort Worth, yes.
Fort Worth, oh.
Yes. So one of my friends sent me some pretty good jokes where the Cowboys are concerned, making fun of their misfortune. And I wanted to share a couple of these simply because they had me laughing out loud.
And it's timely because Jason Garrett is holding his first press conference.
Is he holding his first press conference?
Right now, yeah. It's on
fantastic.
NFL Network. Live.
Fantastic. Yeah, yeah. I'm looking here. I've got
very timely.
Yes. Well, let me change my satellite here, and I'll get a little NFL Network going on. And then
he's been up there for a few minutes. So
has he been up there?
Yeah.
All right. Here you go. Let me share these with you. The Texas Highway Patrol,
sure,
cracking down on speeders heading into Dallas. For the first offense, they give you two Dallas Cowboy tickets. Mm-hmm. If you get stopped a second time, they make you use them.
Didn't.
What do you call 47 millionaires around a TV watching the Super Bowl? The Dallas Cowboys.
Oh.
What do the Dallas Cowboys and Billy Graham have in common? I love this one, by the way.
The Cowboys and Billy Graham.
Billy Graham have in common.
I don't know.
They both can make 70,000 people stand up and yell, "Jesus Christ!"
Wow. That's
my favorite.
Wow.
That's my favorite. How do you keep a Dallas Cowboy out of your yard? Put up a goalpost.
Oh.
Woohoo! We're on a roll now. Don't stop me. What do you call a Dallas Cowboy with a Super Bowl ring?
Retired?
Old.
Yeah. Well, that was close. That's what I was
close.
Going for. Yeah.
Close. What's the difference between the Dallas Cowboys and a dollar bill? This is another good one.
The dollar's more valuable?
You can still get four quarters out of a dollar
bill.
Oh! Yeah! How many Dallas Cowboys does it take to win a Super Bowl?
I don't know.
Nobody remembers.
Wow.
All right. Last and certainly least.
You got the Steve Urkel snort there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, one of those. I must have snorted last night.
Did I do that?
Yeah, exactly.
What do the Cowboys and a possum have in common? This is also good.
They're both eventually roadkill?
Close. Both play dead at home and get killed on the road.
Oh.
Thank you very much. I'll be here all week. So I thought you might enjoy those.
That's good. That's very good. So you're Fort Worth boy. I didn't realize that.
Yes.
For some reason, I always thought the Austin area because of where you went to school. But
yeah, well, I'm, you know, Texas guy at heart, obviously.
Sure.
As strippers, he knows that.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But, you know, I grew up in Fort Worth, and I grew up 5 minutes from the TCU campus, so that's why I've got an interest also in all things frogs.
I had a Fort Worth experience once. Went to a Cowboys-Falcons game in, what year was that? 99, I think.
Really?
It was the year after the Falcons made the Super Bowl. So that was, yeah, it had to be 99. Okay. Jamal, it was the game that Jamal Anderson, remember old Jamal Anderson running back?
Yeah, the Dirty Bird.
Yeah, he did like a hop jump step to avoid a tackler and ended up blowing out his knee and missed the rest of the season. And we saw it, the play, because we were sitting in one of the end zones and play happened right in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that week, we spent, you know, like a week in Dallas, the Dallas area. And on one night, I think it was a Friday or a Saturday night, we said, hey, let's go to Fort Worth. Because, you know, a bunch of us were, you know, kind of country music fans, wanted to check out the authentic Fort Worth scene, you know. We went to Billy Bob's.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Can't go to Fort Worth and not go to Billy Bob's.
Well, that's what I thought. So we show up, we pull up. It's like, what, 45 minutes between Dallas and Fort Worth, roughly?
Yeah. 45-minute
drive?
Right.
So we're driving there at night. It's like, you know, 7, 8 o'clock at night, 9, whatever it was. We're making a night of it. So we went to Fort Worth. We get to Billy Bob's, and there are no cars in the lot.
What?
We're like...
It was closed?
It was either a Friday or a Saturday night, so we figured, you know, it's going to be a hopping place. It's the best time to go. We waited the whole trip to go there. There were no cars. There were like a few cars in the lot, hardly any. And we get to the doors, and the doors were locked. And so we're like looking through the window. We could see there were a couple of people milling about inside.
Yeah, what's
but
up with that?
It was deserted. And we're like, what in the hell's going on here? And we didn't get to experience Billy Bob's.
Wow.
It was terrible.
It wasn't open?
No.
At all?
No.
That's pretty weird. They must have had it closed for a private function or something. That's the only thing I can think of. Sometimes they do that.
Really?
Every time I've been there, yeah. I mean, that place is jumping, and you go in there, and, you know, you ride the mechanical bull.
Yeah.
And, you know,
we had the whole thing planned out. We were looking forward to it because everyone said, oh, if you go to Dallas, you got to go to Fort Worth and check out Billy Bob's. And, yeah, we had just bad timing, I guess.
They actually had a real bull ring inside Billy Bob's at one point, too.
Oh, really?
I don't know. They may still, because I haven't been in there in a long time, but they had an actual, you know, physical bull ring with a big, huge, ugly, physical, you know, snot-blowing bull
right
in there. So
right.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me,
yeah,
right? You know, and, but no.
So my lone trip to Fort Worth was a disappointment.
Sorry. I'm very, very sorry.
I hope
How
I get
can
the
I
chance
possibly make it up to you.
I'm not blaming you for it. I'm just. I hope someday I get the chance to let it.
Well,
redeem
you were out
itself
there in the right part of town though, because the north side of town has the actual only working stockyard left in the country.
Oh yeah.
You know, well, they actually do cattle drives.
Uh-huh.
You know, twice a week through the North Fort Worth, through the stockyards, and go in there, and the guys go in there and buy and sell cattle. You know, they're livestock, not stock exchange or, you know, paper stocks. We're talking livestock.
Yeah.
They actually do that. It's one of the only working, you know, stockyards in the country like that. A couple of great, great restaurants out there as well in terms of the steaks. Cattleman's, I don't know if it's still open or not, but the other one was the Star Cafe. If you really want a steak and you really want to know how it should be done, you got to go to one or the other.
Hmm.
Good stuff.
Well, hopefully I'll get back. Hey, you
and
know
the
what?
Mexican food and the margaritas are not bad out there either, brother. So,
oh, well, I've heard, yeah. If the Patriots make the Super Bowl
and go to Dallas,
yeah, I'll make
the
trip to Fort
Arlington.
Worth.
Okay, the game
right,
is actually
which
in
is
Arlington.
In between the two,
right? And you don't want to stay in Dallas, okay? Just don't even think about staying in Dallas.
Well, we won't have a choice.
It's way overrated.
We won't have a choice.
Okay, wherever the team stays,
yeah.
But the team is smart. They'll stay. It won't be in Dallas. They'll stay in either somewhere close in Arlington or they'll be in Fort Worth.
Uh-huh.
But whatever, get yourself a car and go to Fort Worth because
that's
where the partying will actually
be. Yeah, and I'm sure during Super Bowl week, Billy Bob's will be open.
Well, the whole Metroplex will be jumping. Absolutely jumping.
So hopefully we'll get a chance to go there again soon.
I hope so. That's also why I'm rooting for TCU to join the Big East.
So you can go down there at least every other year or whatever?
Damn straight.
Yeah.
All right, John in Vermont sends this email. He says, guys, quick question. After this thorough ass whooping, do you look at the San Diego and Minnesota game and think maybe those were just lucky wins? It seemed like this game was similar to those games, except instead of the other team making stupid, costly mistakes, we were the ones handing the game to the opponents on a silver platter. It almost seems now like we haven't had a truly convincing win outside of the Miami game, and even that relied on 21 special teams points. What are your thoughts?
Well, that is the most complete game they played was the Miami
game. Miami? No
yeah.
question. Because you got contributions from all facets of the game.
And yet
you
they
don't
gave
normally
up
get that kind of contribution from your kicking
right.
game. Or your special team.
That was the most complete game, yet they still gave up 400 yards of total offense.
Right.
So there was, you know, good and bad news to be taken out of that game. But it was still their most complete game to date. And, yeah, the emailer's right. There are a lot of other games that they've won that they easily could have lost. The Baltimore game, for sure, they were losing the whole game and had a miraculous comeback. Minnesota, I think they were kind of in charge of that game for the most part. I mean, they gave up a lot of big plays in the passing game, but they, I think, had that game fairly well in hand from the beginning. I'll disagree with them on that point, but there were certainly some other games. You know, the Buffalo game was close. Cincy, if not for a couple of big plays and special teams and defense, would have been closer. So, yeah, I mean, it just, everything that could go wrong has not for New England so far, up until the Cleveland game, where everything that could go wrong went wrong. So, but that's I think that's been the case with pretty much every team this year. It's been that kind of football season. There's been a lot of bad football. There's been a lot of mistake-filled games. There have been a lot of games that have been decided by freak plays or, you know, plays at the end, the very end of the game. So it's just that kind of year, John.
Right. A couple of other comments via Facebook here about being a big picture or an immediate moment kind of fan. Maribeth says, definitely the big picture. Just put it all together and keep us in contention. No one could think that they will never lose a game. It happens, but they need to keep rolling and stay in the hunt. I got another one here. Keith says, most, if not all, teams will have bad days, so I think that getting too high or too low on a week-by-week basis is crazy.
Right.
I'm not sure that you can't also look at things in the medium term, though, John. They lost to the Jets and came back the following week, but they didn't lie down and play dead like they did against Cleveland. I think we'll learn a lot about the Pats for the rest of the year this weekend by how they play the Steelers. If they play very hard, even if they lose, I can believe that they've turned a corner. Another supine, I think that's what he meant, performance. Mm. And I'll start worrying because that would mean the team has already peaked and could be about to unravel.
Yeah. Were you questioning the word there?
Yeah.
Supine, lying on one's back.
Yes, correct. Thank you very much for
sure,
that.
Sure, no problem.
It's always good to have a thesaurus hanging around. So I can't disagree with that. I think actually... person who sent that just basically is kind of right on. I think we'll learn a lot this week about how they play. They don't necessarily have to win the game, but I think we'll be able to tell largely because of the effort that will be out there.
Hello, you play to win the game.
Sure you do. Sure you do. But at the same time, though, if we see the effort. And maybe they lose a tough one or they lose one down on the crunch time or what have you, I think you'd be able to take something positive even out of a loss.
You have to. As a professional, you have to. I mean, that's, you know, self-evaluation is how you improve. That's one step towards improving, you know, recognizing where the mistake was and trying to correct it, learn from it. You know, that's what you do when you're at this level. And
right.
That's an example that you can take to any aspect of your life, really, to get all philosophical on you.
No, that's quite all right. You can get philosophical if you like. Let me see. I've got one more here that I wanted to read, too. This one comes from Curtis. Hang on, Curtis. I'll find it here again in a moment. This happened yesterday. Sometimes Facebook gets overloaded. There we go. Big picture. He says, I like. It's all about building momentum and continuous improvement, leading to a run in the playoffs. Great to have home field advantage in the playoffs, but progressing on a consistent basis in all aspects of the game is most important, hitting your stride at the right time. Sounds like somebody who's probably been there before in some form or fashion.
Hmm.
All right, so we'll continue taking your comments. Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482. Or Facebook as well, on whether or not you are a big picture kind of a fan, or are you more set in the moment of a single game and going at it week to week like the players themselves profess to do. Interested in your take on what kind of a fan that you might be. We were talking briefly about Cleveland and the fact that Cleveland is sort of a common bind here between the Patriots and the Steelers. It's because second time now in 3 weeks, the Steelers are going to face a team that was upset by the Browns. The Browns, you might recall, beat the New Orleans Saints The week after they beat the Saints beat the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the Browns, while they're just 3-5 overall in the season, they do have a couple of good pelts, I think, on their belt so far, not only in the Patriots, but also in the New Orleans Saints. So I think the Saint, I think the Steelers most likely will still have their attention, you know, toward the Patriots simply because of what, you know, the Browns were able to do to the Saints and vice versa.
What was the result of the other game?
Well, the Browns beat the Saints, and then the very week after that, the Saints beat the Steelers.
No, I mean, you said there were. This will be the third game that the Steelers.
Steelers will be facing a team that was beaten by Cleveland.
Okay.
So it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, that, you know, the Steelers have a whole lot to fear, but at the same time, it should at least get their attention somewhat. And the Steelers, as we'll talk about here a little bit more in just a bit when Bill Hillgrove, who's the voice of the Steelers, will join us, they've got their own injury problems, you know, coming up right now. They've they made a move on the IR today as well.
Yeah, along the offensive line.
Right, so we'll recap some of that. And
even though Marquise Pouncey came back, he's probably not at 100%. Their rookie center.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got some concerns.
What do you think your concerns are, at least for this team right now? And you know, I know that you mentioned earlier that you kind of feel like maybe last week might pay dividends as soon as this week for the Patriots. Can you expand on why you think that might be?
Well, just because I think psychologically it was a wake up and grow up moment. I think this team is so young at so many areas that they need to learn how to win games, especially games they're supposed to win. Last week was a game they were supposed to win. 6-1 versus 2-5, you're supposed to win that game if you're 6-1.
Right.
And while it's been a good confidence boost for the players to experience wins where they didn't play well, it was also a good experience for them to lose in the fashion that they did, to serve as a wake-up call about how to prepare for any opponent, no matter their record, no matter where the game's being played. And, especially with the type of schedule they have going forward, they need to refocus, rededicate themselves. And I think that's what this game has the potential to do. For this young team, help them grow up a little bit.
And personnel moves on both sides. We told you, of course, about Stephen Gostkowski being placed on injured reserve with a quad injury, an alleged torn quad muscle. But that's due to several reports that are out there already. Shane Graham has been signed to take his place for the remainder of the season as the Patriots' place kicker. The Patriots have also made a move with a brand-new long snapper. They released Jake Ingram. And they have signed long snapper Matt Catula, who is most recently with Baltimore. They also signed cornerback Thad Turner to the practice squad in the Patriots transactions. All right, my man, I'll let you get upstairs and get to work.
Okay.
And I'll see you tomorrow, right?
Very good. You will.
All right.
We'll make our picks.
And the picks will, well, I'm not sure I'm picking. I said this yesterday.
Whoa.
I said this yesterday. You were off yesterday, so, I guess I should bring that up. But based on, you know, the fact that I really felt strongly that the Patriots would win this last week and they got thumped, I'm not sure I can trust my gut instinct any longer.
Oh, come on.
At least where the Patriots are concerned.
Come on. Don't be like that. You've got 24 hours. You'll change your mind. You'll change your mind. I'll make you pick.
Just don't hurt me.
No, I won't. All right, I'll see you tomorrow, John.
All righty, way to go. All right, let's take a time out here, and then coming back on the other side, Bill Hillgrove, the voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, inside the Patriots playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program.
Ron Jaworski,
Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's
gotta be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian, you can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees, and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this when you're ready.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
Welcome back inside the playbook. Hour number two here for a Wednesday on Patriots.com radio. I'm John Rook. Pats and the Steelers coming up on Sunday night from Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's coming off a 27-21 win over the Cincinnati Bengals. So they are also 6-2 in the year, just like the Patriots are, 6-2 in the year for the second straight year, I might add. Steelers 2-1 against the AFC North. And 4-1 on the road, so actually you have to get to come home for a couple of games as well. They've done very well in prime time games. I see where they're 13-4 in prime time regular season games under Mike Tomlin as well. 6-0, in fact, on Monday Night Football. So they've obviously got it going in the right direction. Ben Roethlisberger is back in the fold. You know, this team, while it does have a few injury problems to speak of, at least now, like the Patriots do. The Steelers made a move and put offensive tackle Max Starks on injured reserve today, just like the Patriots placed Steven Gostkowski on IR today. Team placed him on the injured reserve list because of a neck injury that he suffered in the game against Cincinnati on Monday night. Starks apparently is going to require some surgery. Team expects him to make a recovery in time for next year. They have activated offensive tackle Chris Scott from the PUP to replace Starks on the roster. So that's the latest move that the Steelers have made. Bill Hillgrove is the radio voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he joins us now inside Patriots Playbook. And, Bill, it's great to visit with you. Thanks again for the time today. How are you?
Well, I'm as busy as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs, John, but you know how that feeling, don't you?
Every once in a while. I do, but you're still my idol, Bill. You know that, right?
Well, why am I your idol?
Just because you're busy all the time. You don't have a down season.
It keeps me out of trouble, and that's probably a good thing.
I like that. For those that don't know, not only with the Pittsburgh Steelers, Bill is also the longtime 30-plus-year voice of the Pittsburgh Panthers as well. So he's juggling college basketball now and college football, the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's a great life in the Steel City, huh?
Yeah, it's as long as those teams win, it's fun. I can't imagine being an announcer for a club like the Pirates. But then I don't have to worry about that.
No, you probably don't. Well, it would have been okay, I guess, if you were back in the 70s, you know, and sticking around in the We Are Family era, it would have been okay.
Or the 1960 club. As a matter of fact, you know, Bing Crosby had stored tape from Game 7 in his wine cellar. They discovered it this past year.
Right.
And Bob Costas is going to gather Dick Groat, Bill Mazeroski, and Bobby Richardson. And they're going to do something at a local theater this coming Saturday, Saturday the 13th, next Saturday.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, I'm confused. Anyhow, they're going to do that, and it's going to be a charity thing. It's kind of neat.
Oh, that's very neat. And, again, for those that aren't aware, Dick Groat is actually Bill's basketball partner on the Pittsburgh Panthers broadcast there on local radio in Pittsburgh. And Dick's a great guy, always giving of his time, and it's great to visit with him. Actually saw him on the sidelines the other night. I knew that you were doing the Steelers game, but I managed to flip back and forth between the Steelers and the Panthers game. They were playing Rhode Island in basketball, the very first college basketball game of the year that Pittsburgh ended up winning. But saw Dick in his usual place, so I know all things are normal in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, they sure are, and he recently celebrated his 80th birthday, and he looks like
God
he can still play.
Yeah, he does. He does. That's fantastic. Speaking of playing, how concerned are Steelers fans right now over the sudden injury bug that's come up and bit them a little bit?
Well, obviously, when you lose the left tackle, it's a concern because the people you're putting over there aren't in Max Stark's league when it comes to being able to handle those edge rushers, and you know, and I think that's a matter of concern. So I guess they'll have to adjust the game plan in order to help whoever's going to be over there. Probably it'll be Jonathan Scott, who is their swing tackle, and then Chris Scott, this kid from Tennessee that has been on the PUP list, will back him up. You know, last week we were down to five linemen late in the game against Cincinnati.
Wow.
And we had one back left because of a couple of concussions. So despite that, they ran the ball pretty well when they had to preserve the victory.
Also had some concussions as well. I know Will Allen had a concussion. You had Mwelde Moore with a concussion. Isaac Redman, I think, also a concussion. Is there any word yet today? I mean, I assume the injury list will come out in a couple of hours here, but have you heard anything one way or the other about how these guys might have tested?
John, I honestly haven't because I'm getting ready for a basketball game tonight, so the Steelers are kind of on the back burner, and I got a football game in Connecticut tomorrow. So
nice.
I really haven't, but I suspect just reading between the lines, the way Mike Tomlin talked at his news conference on Tuesday, I kind of think that those guys should all be ready and that they should pass that test that they have to pass before they let them back on the field.
You also had, I think I noticed here, Brett Kiesel, hamstring. Chris,
yeah, that's
going to
be a while. You know, when you're 31, 32 years old, that's going to linger. So, you know, fortunately, Ziggy Hood and Nick Eason have stepped up. So I think short term, those are the guys are going to have to turn to you know, play those defensive end positions in the 3-4.
Right. Kimoyatu had a knee sprain. Heath Miller has fluid on the knee, although I can't imagine that's going to cause him to miss a game. Marquise Pouncey, I guess, bruised tibia. You know,
yeah,
honestly,
somebody kicked him in the shin. You know how painful
is that? What happened?
Oh yeah, and it, you know, he was carted off the field, and then all of a sudden carted back on again, and he finished up the game. So that's the least of the injury concerns.
Well, that's, you know, I can't imagine he'll be missing too much time here. How has this team, in your estimation, responded, and how easy has it been for them to reassimilate Ben Roethlisberger after his missing the first four games?
I think it was as seamless as it could be. I think, first of all, he stayed in great shape in preseason and also training camp. I've never seen him throw the ball better. And so I don't think the worry was Ben. I don't think the worry was his teammates because they had to make do while he was gone, and they amassed a pretty good record in the process. And Charlie Batch and Dennis Dixon did as good a job as they could, kind of holding the fort till Ben came back. But I think it's been pretty seamless, and I think it's only going to get better. What I've seen get better, John, is that third down percentage. It, as going into the last game, was 34% last in the conference. It's up a little bit, but with Ben back, it's up around 41%. And, you know, that's only going to get better as the season goes on.
Is it just my imagination, or are my eyes telling me that rushing production has actually gone down slightly since Ben returned?
Yeah, and but I think it's been good balance, and it was good balance against the Bengals, and I think that's what they're going to try to monitor for the rest of the way, is to, you know, have that equal threat of run and pass. You know, I know a guy like Ben, you want to turn him loose and have the guns blazing, but, you know, as you get into the, you know, cold winter approaching from the northeast, you know, throwing the football all over the lot is not always a great idea.
How surprised do you think Mike Tomlin and or this team was to see the Patriots throw up a stinker last week like they did against Cleveland?
Mike preaches it all the time. It sounds like coach speak, but if you're not ready, that other side gets paid just as much as your side. And, you know, the old adage, any given Sunday, I think that's what snuck up and bit the Patriots last week. Also, I think Cleveland's a better club this year than they were last year. Mm-hmm. And now that this quarterback has kind of stabilized their offense, their defense is not bad. So, you know, that shouldn't surprise too many people. You got to lace them up tight every week.
I think we were all sufficiently impressed with the play of Peyton Hillis. I'm not sure how he ever got out of Denver, considering some of their running back problems right now, but Hillis ran roughshod over the Patriots. I also noticed that, you know, the Steelers are getting a team for the second time in 3 weeks that lost to Cleveland. Of course, the last time that happened, it was New Orleans, and New Orleans came back to beat Pittsburgh. So I would imagine the Patriots might have their attention.
I think that the Steelers are expecting the Patriots' best punch on Sunday night.
What are your thoughts over the years, Bill, of the way that the Steelers and the Patriots have matched up? I think that fans have certainly seen games that have been in crunch time, certainly seen that they've seen games that have meant championships, the ability to go to the Super Bowl, some great regular season matchups as well. Where do, and I guess where I'm getting at with this, where do the Steelers place the Patriots in terms of opponents or rivals?
Well, right up there, not quite with Baltimore or Cleveland. And, you know, Cleveland, since they came back into the league, it just hasn't been as competitive as I think the Steelers would like. But right up there with Baltimore, because, you know, the fans of this town and some of the players who are still around remember that the Patriots came in here and stole their Super Bowl appearance. So, you know, I think it's a rivalry of note.
The thing that impresses me most about the Steelers, at least right now, I mean, their numbers defensively are obviously in the upper echelon, in the top two or three in most categories defensively. The Patriots, you know, while the offense has shown some spark, the Patriots' numbers are down since Randy Moss left a few weeks ago. And the thing that stands out to me is that the Steelers held the Bengals, I think, on Monday to 64 yards rushing. So that puts the Steelers' defense the first team in NFL history to hold opponents to 75 or fewer rushing yards in each of their first 8 games of a season. Now, I didn't know that, but if that's true, which I assume it is, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it sure is, and I'm glad you gave me that little factoid, because I'll just slip that in my pile of things that I use to impress people. Now, you know what I've seen since training camp started? A team playing with an attitude. And I think the Ben suspension kind of increased that chip-on-the-shoulder type approach. And I see it reflected in the defense, John. This defense flies to the football. And even if you get those shallow crossing routes, I should say, you know, in the past I've seen Steelers defenses, and last year when they lost those 5 games in a row, including the ones to Oakland and Kansas City, those shallow crossing routes were going for 8, 9, 10 yards. This year they're going to 2 and 3 yards, and bang, the tackle's made. And so I think that's the reason that this team is doing the amazing job against the rush that they've been able to do so far in 8 games.
You know, there are a couple of players on your defensive side as well that have made news, you know, for other reasons other than just playing, well, let's just say for big hits. Obviously, James Harrison has had a little talk with Commissioner Goodell, and certainly he's been mentioned for some of the hits, just like the Patriots' Brandon Merriweather has. Troy Polamalu has also been rather outspoken as to whether or not it's appropriate, and maybe the players themselves should have input as to who should be fined or who should be suspended or what have you. All of that standing aside, do you feel like at all that the way those two guys play has been or could be altered just because of what's transpired on the field this year in terms of the big hits?
John, my opinion is you don't change the nature of the sport or any facet of it during a season. You've got to do that when there are no emotions involved in the off season. Mm-hmm. If you're going to lower the target, you can't do it during the season. You've got to wait till it's over and then thunder down on everybody. Right now, and I think I saw this, and if I didn't, then I'm all wet, and I've been wrong before, but I saw Commissioner Goodell in Cincinnati on Monday night actually talking to the fans and signing autographs, and I said, you know, that looks like damage control, because I think the fans have sided with the players in saying, hey, you can't legislate this thing until the season is over. Let this season run its course and then start, you know, thundering on people for the crown of the helmet and hits at the legs and all that other stuff that they're trying to legislate right now.
Sure. Well, it still seems to me to be the same old Steelers as they have been in the last few years, a tough physical team. They've got plenty of talent at receiver. They've got good, solid running backs. Roethlisberger. You've got strike artists, tackling hard defensively. I don't really see much that has changed. What, in your thought, is different about this Pittsburgh team or may set this Pittsburgh team apart maybe from a recent vintage in the last year or so?
Well, Polamalu healthy, knock on wood. I know that Aaron Smith likely won't be back. If at all, it won't be to the playoffs. But, you know, those two key ingredients certainly weren't in place during their swoon last year. And I also see the emergence of Lawrence Timmons as a budding superstar. Now, you already have one in James Harrison. You already have one in Lamar Woodley. And now you've got a third linebacker that's going to, use his closing speed to bring ball carriers and receivers into submission. And then it's all led by James Farrier. We call him Potsy. That's his nickname. Mm-hmm. And he's as steady as it gets. So, you know, that linebacking core, I think, is the key to what's going on there.
How did he get the nickname Potsy?
It was a childhood thing. He had a pot belly, I guess. It no longer is evident.
But well, maybe he was a fan of...
the nickname forward. What's that?
Maybe he was a fan of Anson Williams on Happy Days.
Well, he's a Virginia grad, and when William and Mary beat Virginia last year, Mike Tomlin just kind of lorded it over Potsy and Heath Miller, and that was a lot of fun for a couple of days.
I like it. Well, Bill, thank you. I know you've got to prep for a game tonight, so appreciate the time today and continued success, and I know we'll be seeing you on the road very, very soon.
John, please tell the Patriots to take it easy on Sunday night.
Okay. I'll make sure that they know that. Thanks, Bill. Okay.
Thanks, John.
All right, you got it. That's Bill Hillgrove, is the play-by-play voice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, joining us here inside the playbook. He may be the busiest guy. I mean, I know I probably seem busy to many of you. I'm busy to myself in a lot of ways, but he takes busy to a completely different level. And so when I had Kevin give him a call to see if he could join us, you know, and found out what his schedule was, I'm like, oh, there's no shot here. But sure enough, he makes time, so it's greatly appreciated. He's a longtime friend. I've known Bill for well over 20 years, largely through, you know, our work in the Big East Conference together. And then he actually just came about the voice of the Steelers. He's been the Steelers play-by-play voice, I think, for the last 9 or 10 years. He's been the voice of the Pitts Panthers since the mid-70s. So probably going on about 34, 35, 36 years is the voice of the Pitt Panthers.
Just a funny little aside, John.
Yes.
When you call Bill Hillgrove, instead of a ringtone, mm-hmm. you get the Pink Panther music.
I like it.
So I'm sitting there waiting for him to answer the phone, listening to the Pink Panther music.
Da-dun, 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 da-dun,
which is very appropriate because of the Pitt Panthers.
Da-dun. Of course. I think that's pretty cool. But, you know, good guy, good people, one of the good guys on the road, when you're, traveling out and about. And there was, you know, no better choice, I don't think, 10 years or so ago for the Steelers play-by-play voice than Bill. You know, he spent a lot of years in local television there in Pittsburgh as well as local radio. And he probably knows the Pittsburgh sports scene about as well as any single individual does there. So glad that we had a chance to get his thoughts for a couple of moments on the matchup. Speaking of the matchup, 13-7 is the all-time record between the Patriots and Steelers. Steelers actually own the lead in the all-time series. That's during the regular season. In the postseason, it's 1-3.
favor of the Patriots. So that makes the all-time mark 14 wins for Pittsburgh and 10 for New England. This will be the 25th matchup between the two sides. Pittsburgh is just 1-1 against the Patriots, though, at Heinz Field in the regular season, which is what this one will be, of course, on Sunday night. Not that it means a heck of a lot. Certainly doesn't mean a whole lot in the overall scheme of things. But just to give you a bit of an idea, it seems as if in the last, 10 years or so, the Patriots have an extraordinary amount of success. And when you look at it strictly from a playoff perspective, you'd probably have to agree with that. Pittsburgh hasn't won at home in the regular season against the Patriots since beating them 34-20 back in 2004. The Steelers snapped the Patriots' NFL record 18-game regular season win streak with that win in 04. New England has won 6 of the past 8 in the series overall. That includes the postseason, including wins in 01 and 04, the AFC Championship games, as I talked about. Both of those were in Pittsburgh. Let's see what else I had written down here. Steelers beat the Pats 7-6 back in 98 in the AFC Divisional Playoffs. I remember that one. Pittsburgh lost to the Patriots in the AFC title game in January of 02, and they lost 41-27 in January of 04 in the AFC Championship game. So it seems like the Patriots have had more than their fair share of luck, and I guess when it comes down to championship games, they have. In the regular season, it's been largely a little bit different story, and Pittsburgh has more than held its own, especially when you date it back to the days of the old Three Rivers Stadium, which used to be there, long since torn down, and Heinz Field basically stands in its place there in downtown Pittsburgh. But it's certainly been an interesting series. You could certainly argue, well, I don't even know that you could argue, to be honest with you. I don't know that it's even arguable, the point, that it's been one of the more popular series in the NFL, and it's probably because both teams have been good for the best part of the last, most part of the last decade. Now, the Steelers were down last year coming off of a Super Bowl season. A lot of that had to do with some injury. A lot of that had to do with performance, a little bit of both. Maybe thought that they were going to come back to the, you know, to the pack a little bit, but you know, I think the Steelers and the Patriots and the Colts, and you can probably throw the Ravens in there to a lesser extent, because the Ravens haven't really won anything since 2000 when they won their one and only Super Bowl. But you know, those three, four teams right there, I'm of the opinion that even in this day and age of parity in the NFL, these teams more retool. Rather than reload. I don't think they have to dig deep in order to get competitive again. The Patriots have managed to stay competitive for a long time through their system, and I think the Steelers are very similar in that regard. You know, even when Bill Cowher left, stepped aside, retired, Mike Tomlin came in to replace him as head coach, I think that that whole thought process, that whole Rooney family attitude certainly remained. They found, it would appear, the right man to continue to lead that franchise onto, you know, continued success. But, you know, these teams, I mean, there's just a handful of them. We talked this week about how you can look 10 or 12 teams and say, hey, I can see them in the Super Bowl. And you have to put the Patriots and Steelers, you know, in that discussion. But really, amongst the elite teams, the teams that you expect to be good every year, how many teams really are there? 3 or 4. And maybe fewer than that in the NFC. I don't even got the NFC in the discussion right now because it seems like they change over with good teams every year. But in the AFC, for the better part of the last 10 to 12 years, you can look back at, I think, primarily those four franchises, those four teams that I mentioned, Patriots, Steelers, Colts, and then to a little bit lesser extent, the Ravens, and say, you know what, these teams are going to be good pretty much every year. And you really can't say that about anybody else. You know, there are other teams that have had good years in the interim, but for whatever reason they've come back to the pack, or they couldn't sustain it, or they've had dropped it and had a losing season, or what have you. Or they've had, you know, changeover, they've had ownership changeover, head coaching changeover. You know, a lot of teams have. That's the nature of the beast. But those three or four teams, these are two of the elite teams. That's why I think, you know, you'll probably see great ratings, you know, for the Sunday night game on television. That's why, you know, we'll get tremendous interest here on the website throughout the course of the week, and people trying to find out information, people trying to, you know, get fired up, you know, with their latest, you know, insight, you know, for the game or what have you. It's all a part of it. And it's pretty cool, you know, when you sit back and you think about it, you know, that, you know, you can actually kind of watch this thing unfold. The Patriots are going to, I had to catch my thought there for a second. The Patriots are going to have their hands full. I think we can all agree on that. I think also the Patriots will probably be prepared. I also believe that the loss to Cleveland will probably end up benefiting this team in the long run. It's a shame that it had to happen. It's a shame that it had to happen. I don't know anybody that thought that that was going to happen, but it did. So how do you make, you know, chicken salad out of chicken feathers? How do you turn that negative into a positive? And the answer to that is by not letting the Browns beat you again, which is what will happen if you come out lackluster like they did, with no energy, no enthusiasm, no oomph at the start of the game. I mean, they let Cleveland jump on them like white on rice and stay on them. And they never physically, emotionally, mentally got into the game after that first 10 points was scored by the Browns on Sunday. That absolutely, positively cannot happen against the Steelers, or the Steelers will bury them. Now, as I kind of begin to start looking at this thing and looking at the matchups and trying to sort this out and where I think, you know, the difference could actually lie here, you know, just very early game planning, my biggest concern, at least from a Patriot standpoint, is how do you I mean, I realize that the Steelers are going to, you know, miss a little bit on the defensive end as well with Kiesel's, you know, loss here. But, you know, certainly the backers worry me. Polamalu is the heart and soul of this defense. Ed Bouchette, who covers the Steelers for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he joined us yesterday in the playbook, and he said as much. He said, you know, the biggest improvement between last year and this year is the fact that Troy Polamalu is back healthy, and he's leading this team. He not only sets a physical tone, but he sends a mental tone for this team that everybody seems to rally around. And so you've got, you know, the entire linebacking core, as solid as they are and as vicious as they can be, you've got them flying to the football. The Patriots are going to have to be on their mark. They, you know, don't give up a lot of yardage, certainly in the rush game, as we've already talked about here today, but they're very close in the passing game, which, you know, tells me that it's going to be even tougher, you know, for possession receivers like Wes Welker to get open against this Steeler defense. If I'm the Steelers, I'm looking at the Patriots and I'm thinking, you know, you're going to have to run to beat me here. We're going to kind of stay, you know, 3 to 5 yards away from the line of scrimmage, and you're going to have to use Benjarvis Green-Ellis or Danny Woodhead, and maybe, you know, Fred Taylor's health and return, if he can come back this Sunday, will be the biggest swing factor for the Patriots that we might see this week. It might be. Because I think they'd have to respect Fred Taylor's ability to run the ball if Taylor's in there getting regular carries. Without Taylor in there, I think they say, okay, Benny, okay, Danny, you're going to have to beat us. You're going to have to show us you can do it. And they're going to take away, you know, Tom's dink and dunk game. That's what they'll try to do. You know, they'll give you the mid-range pass, but, you know, then again, the Patriots have had, you know, some difficulty in connecting. We've seen the drops from Gronkowski. We've seen drops from Hernandez. We saw a drop last week from, you know, Brandon Tate, you know, on a big play. So they're going to say, fine, we're going to give you that opportunity. You guys got the drops. We don't think you can hold on to the ball. This is why I, right now, at least midweek, as of today, Wednesday, I don't like this matchup for the Patriots again. I said this about Minnesota 2 weeks ago, I know, and I'm sure some of you are going to remind me of that, that I just didn't like the physical matchup, and what do the Patriots do? Well, they managed to do well against the Vikings. There's no mistaking that. There's no reason that the Patriots can't come out of this game and do well. But again, when you look at it and you look at the matchups and you see what the Steelers have done defensively already and what the Patriots, you know, haven't done offensively, wow, where's it going to come from? Where is it going to come from? Can anybody answer that question right now? See, I just don't think you can. Not with any reasonable certainty. tight end, running backs, receivers. You can't stretch the field like you used to a few weeks ago. And we've certainly gone through that quite a bit over the last couple of weeks. Talked about it this week as well. Yeah, this is going to be one of those games where, you know, Randy Moss is going to be missed. I realize we got to get past that. We do. But again, it is a valid reason for why you're seeing traffic for the Patriots receivers, and they're just not able to get the kind of separation you need. And when they get just a little bit of separation, not hanging on to the ball. And you've seen Brady throw the ball off target. I know you have. You've noticed it. We've had emailers talk to us about it. And a couple of you have also suggested to me Brady doesn't seem the same. And maybe you're willing to sort of write that off as, well, Tom just still isn't all the way back from the knee injury a couple of years ago. There may be some truth to that. One of the other factors that I would also enter into this equation is the fact that Brady's trying to force the ball into some areas that he's just not used to doing because there just isn't as much separation between receiver and defender as he has had in the past. That would also account for a couple of the passes being behind receivers, but the receivers not coming up with the ball. It's a combination, I think, of both things. Patriots receivers aren't getting open. Brady's trying to force the ball into some areas that he hasn't had to before because the receivers were open. That's why. And when the ball is getting to them, they're not holding on to it. And so it's been a struggle on offense. The numbers bear that out. They managed to score, but it's because they've been able to get help in other areas. For the Patriots to win this game on Sunday night on the road in Pittsburgh, it'll have to be one of those total team things like you saw against Miami. At least I'm being led to believe that. You're going to have to see special teams have some involvement. You're going to have to see Shane Graham obviously kick the ball as deep as he can, but on returns, you can't let the Steelers set up shop, you know, in the, you know, 30-plus category. It's got to be from the 30-yard line in on a fairly consistent basis. Outside of the 30, shorter field for the Steelers. And while, you know, I'm not entirely, certain that, Pittsburgh's running game is going to be the difference in the game, what I do think is that it could end up being an X factor here based on the Patriots, you know, respect for the Pittsburgh receivers, tight end Heath Miller, Antoine Randall L., you know, all those guys that are, you know, that are there that are catching the football. All right, we'll kind of jump into a little bit more of the X-ing and O-ing, not only, you know, as the show progresses today, but certainly tomorrow and Thursday's program. Let's sneak into the timeout in here, and then I got some emails that I'm going to get to. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us here in the program. 508-543-7482 on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Facebook page is up and running as well. Our question of the day is to whether or not you are either a big picture kind of fan, or are you more set in the immediate moment of a single game? Do you see the big picture? Or are you really just focused on the next game at hand and let's move on to the next week? Kind of like the players do. Big picture or single game? Which is it? Tell me why. Which side do you lean on? And we'll get to your emails coming up in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees, and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed. Go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit card.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
Back inside the playbook here for a Wednesday. I'm John Rook. Of course, on Thursday, Russell Baxter from ESPN will join us. Our NFL research coordinator, Eric Scalavino from PFW, will also be back at the house. A couple of other surprises cooking. Don't want to jump ahead of ourselves because we don't want to jinx anything. But a couple of other surprises cooking that we hope that we'll be able to bring you on tomorrow's program. In the meantime, talking a little bit about today, whether or not you are a kind of a big picture fan or someone who really lives in the moment for your team, whether it's the Patriots or anybody else that you might end up following, and how that affects your game viewing, your pleasure, your following in the NFL. John sends this. He says, on game day, I am a rabid fan, and I lose my mind at my voice screaming when we lose. I'd say that's pretty typical. However, much in following with the Pats philosophy, I let it go on Monday and then start gearing up for the next one. I keep the big picture in mind, but I still live in the moment on game days. That's actually, I hadn't really thought to consider that, John. You can actually be a little bit of both. I probably consider myself a little bit more in the moment than big picture. Although, this is probably on this show, during the course of the week, I probably look at the big picture more than at any other time than I do during the week. I force myself to because I want to see both angles because I consider myself more of an in-the-moment kind of guy. Maybe that comes from having been around sports all of my professional life, having played them, when I was a teenager and, into my early 20s. Having been around a lot of locker rooms in my day, you're basically trained to look at the next opponent, the next game, and that's it. You don't look ahead. But as a journalist, or even as a fan, that's all you can do. You like to see what the road ahead will have, so you can see where the potential pitfalls might be, what the record could be, where the opportunities are, where the pitfalls might lie. I mean, it's only natural. It's human nature to kind of look ahead and consider the big picture.
So it's been interesting, and to try to, you know, juxtapose those two things against each other. I'd have to admit, I feel like I'm a little bit more in the moment, especially on game day. I'm definitely in the moment. I don't even think about what I'm going to do in the next hour. I want to get through the quarter first, and then, you know, when we get to the commercial, then I'll worry about the next thing. John says, now with that big picture in mind, here's what I'm hoping for this weekend. I'm hoping that we fare well against the Steelers, but in the end, I won't be disappointed if we come up short. I know, that's crazy, right? But if we lose to Pittsburgh, I'm pretty sure we'll annihilate the Colts. Don't get me wrong, I'll be thrilled if we win, but for selfish reasons, Manning-hating reasons, I want the Pats not just ready, but fighting mad on the 21st. I want the Colts to leave Foxborough wondering what the hell just ran over them. Okay. See, now that is definitely looking at the big picture. Definitely looking at the big picture. There's a Colts hater there if there ever was one. Brooklyn Matt is up next. He says, John, well, no wise guy antics from me for you to kindly tolerate today. Yesterday I was touched when hearing a 14-year-old email you and ask you for some advice as to how they can become someone like you. Now, the specifics were left open to speculation, which leaves me a veritable bevy of possibilities for zingers, but I'm wearing my angel wings and halo today. John, I'm just wondering if you had the time to follow up with that young person. Maybe you'd forgotten about it. If so, then here's a reminder. I myself had wondered, how does one land the coveted slot of Pat's announcer and all of the other cool jobs you've landed yourself? No worries. I'm more than happy with my own deal as a former small indie record label owner. I was touched to hear the young person yesterday and their interest in becoming someone like you. For one, your positive and personable qualities are largely responsible for you landing those gigs. I can tell that from down here. I was hoping you had some time to get back to that nice, curious young person asking for some advice. Brooklyn Matt. Matt, thanks for the email. Actually, I haven't, but I'm glad you sent me that reminder because I've still got his post and I'll send him a note via Facebook.
It was actually me.
What? That was you?
No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
The young man who sent me the...
But I do want to be like you, John. I'm just letting you know.
Stop it. Stop it. The young man who sent me the Facebook post, his name is Adam, and I will send him a response. But for Brooklyn Matt and anybody else who gives a, you know, rats, you know what, you know, I've been doing this for...
It's taking him a while to come up with it.
I'm trying to count. 32 years. I've been with the Patriots. This is my 18th year with the Patriots. It's my 23rd year now in New England. My 22nd year to do Division I college basketball. My 14th year to do Division I college football. That you probably heard me have to miss, you know, shows from time to time on either one or both of those two counts. I worked in the actually my football experience goes all the way back to working in the old USFL. You know, and I mentioned, you know, to the guys at PFW at the tail end of their show, because I know Andy wasn't there today, but I mentioned watching that 30 for 30 film last night on ESPN about Marcus Dupree, the best that never was. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but it was fantastic. It was extremely well done. I mean, it was really good TV. I mean, it reminded me, you know, as much, you know, crappy stuff as we see on television nowadays, because there's just so much, you know, out there and just only so much you can take. That was well done. It told a story. And not only did it tell a story, but it told a story that none of us really knew about a guy who's a great enigma. For those that don't know, Marcus Dupree was one of the most highly sought after, highly recruited running backs, not only of his era, which was the early 1980s, but of all time. He literally had 347, however many Division I teams there are, schools send him something. Go after him. And it boiled down to Texas and Oklahoma and southern Mississippi, which is where he was close to growing up in Philadelphia, Mississippi. He had verbaled to Texas. He came back home. And then he changed his mind and went to Oklahoma. And that's how, you know, that's part of the rivalry between Texas and Oklahoma. You know, they always accuse each other of doing wrong. Help me out here, strippers. You know that to be true. And so because of that, you know, he ended up going to OU. He had an unbelievable freshman year. Barry Switzer was the coach at the time, rode him hard because he didn't want, you know, anybody to think that he was being treated differently, even though he was clearly the best athlete on a team full of seasoned athletes. I mean, 2 years later, Oklahoma won the national championship. 3 years later, 85, I think it was. And I think his first fall in Oklahoma was 82. So, and then, you know, he ended up having some hamstring troubles, some injury troubles. He didn't like school particularly much. He wasn't going to class, and he just left. It was after a, sorry, strippers, it was after a beatdown that Texas put on them his sophomore year that he just, after that game, he just left. He just left. He left campus. He went back home to Philadelphia, Mississippi. Oh, Stripper sent me a note. He says, I got listed in the credits of that film. Did you? For doing what?
I think he provided some of the footage.
Oh, he says they used my DVD highlights.
Yep, and Perillo, oh, Perillo confirmed that he did see his
no
name.
No kidding. Were they, all right, and the Strippers, was it the high school stuff or was it the early OU stuff? I'd be interested in knowing that. So I'll get him to let me know what that was. It was his OU stuff. Okay, cool. That's very cool. Well, I figured you would know because you're the OU expert there. You probably got all things. You probably go back to Billy Vessel days, you know. Says they found him on YouTube. Oh, cool. So you had posted this stuff on YouTube. They found you there, and, yeah, the editor contacted you. Okay. See, I think that's cool.
We were trying to discuss whether in the credits it actually just said strippers.
It should have. It should have. It should have. You definitely should have done that. Oh, that'd be cool. But I would highly encourage anybody, when the show comes back on or you can get the DVD, you got to see this. It was well told, well produced, well shot. Marcus Dupree is a nice guy. It's hard not to root for Marcus Dupree, even though he committed the mortal sin of, you know, going from Texas to Oklahoma. I know so many Texas fans from that era because I had just graduated from school during the time that he was being recruited because I got out of UT in 81. And, yeah, and so when he got out, I remember following the recruiting story, and I remember when Fred Akers had announced, or at least, you know, the Austin media announced that they got a verbal from, you know, Marcus Dupree, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is as big as, you know, them getting Earl Campbell. I mean, he was that kind of singular, once-in-a-lifetime talent. Seriously. And he's remarkable. Andy says, you know, the best he ever saw was Bo Jackson. I, you know, can't argue with that. Bo won a Heisman Trophy and two sports star and, you know, an unbelievable athlete. But I'm telling you, as far as pure football is concerned and as far as pure running back is concerned, there may not have been a better pure talent than Marcus Dupree.
Also, to be fair, I don't know how old Andy was when Dupree was doing all this stuff.
I don't think – was Andy even alive?
Well, if it was he in 81 and said that he
– He was a senior in high school in 81.
81. So he would have been in college 82.
Yeah, he went to OU in 82.
So that's, what, 28 years ago? I bet Andy was alive. He was just young.
No, he was just a baby.
Yeah.
So I mean,
might have something to do with the
That's why when Andy was, like, dismissing it outright, you know, dude's got to go do his homework. Okay?
Well, yeah, because it is really hard to you know, compare the different generations
of football.
You can't. No, it's impossible.
You can't.
And especially –
but you've got to see the film on this.
You've
got
to do your homework on that stuff.
You got to see the film on this, and then you have to hear from the sports writers who saw him play, who are all interviewed. And you got to hear from Barry Switzer himself and Fred Akers and the other coaches that were involved in recruiting him. Fred Akers was the Texas coach at the time. He had replaced Darrell Royal. And you just got to hear how these guys talk in halting yet glowing tones about Marcus Dupree, who they all know he was the best they ever saw. I mean, he was... One quick little story out of the film was, you know, one of the coaches, I think it was Lucius Selman, who was recruiting him as an assistant for OU at the time, walked into his, you know, little workout facility he had, and you know, there at the high school, and saw Marcus at age 17 bench pressing 400 pounds, and did 10 reps at 400 at age 17. Come on now. 17 years old? First of all, benching 400 pounds is one thing, but doing 10 reps? Come on. I mean, you know, he put a hit on you, and you'd stay in the fetal position for a week. That's the kind of talent this guy was, and he had speed. Fastest, you know, he had sprinters 4-5 speed. He ran the 100-yard dash. Back then it wasn't the 100 meters. Back then it was still yards, the antiquated U.S. system here. He ran the 100-yard dash in 9.5. I think you equate that to meters, which is a little shorter than 100 yards. It probably comes out to around 9.1, 9.2. You know, it may even, you know, it's, I mean, it's just, you know, come on. We're talking, you know, Usain Bolt kind of speed here with the power and ability. It was just a, he was a freak. He was a physical freak, but a great story. Anyway, I've digressed here back from Adam's original point, but it was covering and doing stories like that that really got me involved in doing what I'm doing. I'd loved to get out and do that kind of thing. I actually wanted to be a writer. Started out wanting to be a writer, and that's what I went to school for. I was editor of my high school newspaper. I went to school on a journalism scholarship at UT, and I thought I was going to be a beat writer, and just kind of fell into the broadcast thing by, you know, answering the call for an audition, a campus-wide audition to be the very first voice of the Lady Longhorns, and that's what I ended up winning the audition as a junior in college, and I've stayed in broadcasting really ever since. So that's how it kind of really happened for me. But I'm going to send Adam a note. And in Brooklyn, Matt, I'm glad you brought up the point. About 11 years ago, almost 12 years ago now, I decided to go out on my own after I got fired from my last job. Happens a lot in this business. You know, you don't last long enough, and you don't last too long in this business while getting fired for some reason. Most of the time it's because there's a management changeover or because there's, a salary cut. And you've reached a level where you just make too much money and they can find somebody to do your job cheaper. Not necessarily better, but cheaper. It's happened to everybody. But it happened to me, 12, 15, 20 years ago. That's how long I've been going through this. You may have only had it, hit you recently. And if you have had it hit you recently, I'm sorry that it has. You know, it sucks to be out of work. I know that feeling all too well. I had enough contacts, I had enough, clients where I decided to break out on my own back in the late 90s, and I've been on my own ever since, and so I've added the Patriots and the college football and the college basketball and all these stuff that they kind of cobbled it together, with a lot of the charity work that I do as well here locally, and, managed to create, an entity, so to speak, and that's really how it is, that's how it's come to play. I would encourage you, if you want to know a little bit more, and I haven't completely bored you to tears, I do have a website, johnrook.com. Take a look and give me your thoughts. Tell me what you think. Strippers. Oh, he sent me another note here. He says, Marcus added me to his Twitter and then asked me to call him. I think he thinks I was a hot chick. Yikes. You should call him. You should definitely call him. Definitely call him, strippers. I'd like to know. Maybe you should record the conversation. I'll let you play it on the air here. And we'll all, get an inside scoop. Awesome.
As soon as everybody gets off, we're going to grab them and have a party.
Yeah, there you go. Works for me. All right, let me see if I can squeeze another email here. This one comes from Sam, who says, John, thanks for the show. I'm a big picture girl myself. Paul was getting mad yesterday at the thought that the Bengals loss was a good thing. Of course, I would have preferred a win last Sunday, but I'm looking ahead. I knew this young team would lay an egg at some point, and who better to do it than with the Bengals? This team would have gotten too big of a head if they rolled into Pittsburgh with a 7-1 record with heaps of accolades. Can't say that I disagree with that, Sam. I think that's actually a pretty good assessment there. Better that they get some bonding at the bottom with a Bengals loss and get run over with cockiness at the Steelers or Colts. That loss last Sunday, in my opinion, focused them for the larger achievements ahead. Thanks, Sam in Chicago. Sam, I think, well, first of all, you and Eric are dead on. Dead on that one. Secondly, I tend to agree with the latter part. I do believe that it will help, the loss to Cleveland will help them focus. At least we can, assume it'll help them focus. I don't know whether or not it will help them, win the game on Sunday. We can hope, but I don't know if it'll help them win the game. Maybe, I will allow for this, maybe the loss to Cleveland won't pay immediate dividends. Maybe it will help them in a game beyond this Sunday. See, right now, I kind of sort of tend to believe that. I'm not sure why. I just think the Pittsburgh matchup is going to be incredibly physical. And, yes, Pittsburgh has its own injury problems, which we've diagnosed already a little bit here today. and we'll certainly talk about more tomorrow. But I don't know. I just don't like the Patriots' matchup against the Steelers' defense right now. That one bothers me a little bit. But a good email, Sam. Stripper says the 9.500 yard dash, which Marcus Dupree was able to run, he says means more like a 10-100 meters. Oh, a meter's longer than a yard. What did I say? Yard was longer than a meter? I did, didn't I? Okay. Minute the other way around. But 10-100 meters, nothing wrong with that. What's the world record in the 100 meters? 9 point what? Pretty close. Pretty close. Did I get the rest of them here? Yeah, I think I did. Yeah, okay. Oh, Sean. I've got an email from Sean who says, I'm sure there will be many things that upset me Sunday night, but what's going to bother me the most is Pittsburgh's constant pressure that they will apply on Brady and the Pats' lack of pressure they put on Roethlisberger. I'm really feeling 27-10 Pittsburgh. You know, frankly, Sean, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Lack of pressure on Roethlisberger versus pressure on Brady. And he's going to want to dump it off, and there ain't going to be anybody for him to dump it off to. You'll probably see Brady have to throw it away a lot if they don't get to him, if they just don't out-and-out get to him, which I think the Steelers probably will a couple of times. I don't know if I'll go 27-10. I would say right now I'm kind of leaning more towards about 24-17. But, you know, if you turn the ball over once or twice, it certainly can swing that wildly. So I think that's one of those either-or things. I hope that I feel different over the course of the next 24 hours or so, but I think that's kind of the way that I'm leaning, at least at this stage of the game. All right, that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Patriots Playbook. Shop Talk is coming up next here on Patriots.com Radio here on a Wednesday. Again, on tomorrow's show, Eric Scalavino from POW will be back. We'll run through our picks. Want you to predict the game tomorrow, so start thinking about it now. Give yourself a little bit of a head start here. All right, give it some thought. Tell me what you think. Send me your score tomorrow. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us here. Where you think this game will go. Predict it. Look into your crystal ball. Russell Baxter, of course, the NFL research coordinator for ESPN's family of networks. He'll join us in hour number two of the program tomorrow to break down not only Pittsburgh and New England, but take a look at some of the other key games around the NFL as well this next weekend. Maybe a couple of other surprises in store. Who the heck knows? But that's what I love about the show. You sometimes just never know. Thanks to Bill Hillgrove, the voice of the Steelers, for joining us in the program today. Thanks to you for listening in. Same Pats time, same Pats channel tomorrow, kids.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
We're pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com Radio.